well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio here in just a moment or two about the primary results in Texas last night, which, I'm generally an optimistic fella, but there's a lot that concerns me about the primary results in the Lone Star State last night that I believe translates outside of Texas as well. I'll be honest with you. I think we are in a very, very challenging political environment for not necessarily because of Second Amendment issues, but because of the binary nature of politics these days, right? Where the vast majority of Republicans in office are Second Amendment supporters, the vast majority of Democrats are Second Amendment opponents. That means when it's a bad election cycle for Republicans, it's a bad election cycle for Second Amendment supporters. And while 2A issues I don't think are the driving factor involved here, the Texas primaries shows us that this is a very challenging environment indeed for Republicans. So this is an all hands on deck moment, I think, for gun owners in terms of supporting candidates that are going to continue to support our right to keep our arms. Otherwise, Congress could become a very, very hostile place. State legislatures, we think, are friendly today, could become, opponents of our right to keep our arms. Let's put it this way. We've seen what's happened in Virginia this session, right, when Democrats took control. Virginia's not the only state that could flip this year. Now, Virginia's flip actually happened last November, but there are a lot of states that are in play. And we're talking a lot about, you know, Congress, but the state-level elections are critically important as well. And just, again, some very troubling signs from primary night or primary day in the Lone Star State. So we'll talk with Mark Walters about that. Also want to get Mark's thoughts on the Hamani oral arguments, which took place on Monday before the Supreme Court. So a busy conversation. Let's get it started. Take a look and a listen. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Oh, thanks for having me, brother. I got to spend about 4 hours with you in a board meeting yesterday. I'm seeing your mug, and you're going to be on my show today. So it's a Cam garbage day at the ranch on a Wednesday today.
I mean, and it's just a week chock full of Mark Walters. So it's a good week. so there are a couple of things I want to talk about. And let's get started with with the most recent news. Tuesday was primary day in the Lone Star State of Texas. I hate to be a pessimist. But I'm a little pessimistic this morning after crunching some numbers, right? I mean, so you've got a couple of big races that gun owners were watching, the Texas Senate primary between John Cornyn and Ken Paxton. That's headed to a runoff. This has been a brutal primary fight. I mean, just absolutely going after each other, and that's going to continue for another 10 weeks or so. Meanwhile, the Democrats don't have a runoff election. James Tallarico beat Jasmine Crockett, got more than 50% of the vote, so he can already look ahead to the general election. That's problem number one, because Cornyn and Paxton are going to be spending a lot of money going after each other over the next 10 weeks rather than holding that money to go after Tallarico in November. Mm-hmm. So that race gets more expensive. We can talk again about the Second Amendment ramifications of Cornyn versus Paxton. Yeah, I think one of Cornyn's big problems is that he didn't just vote for the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, but he was one of those who helped shepherd it through the Senate. Right. And Texas gun owners remember that. And then down in Texas 23, Tony Gonzalez, the incumbent, Brandon Herrera, the challenger. Herrera lost by about, 370-something votes 2 years ago.
Yep.
And this time around, honestly, Mark, I figured Brandon Herrera had a really good shot at getting more than 50% of the vote. Tony Gonzalez's campaign has been racked by allegations that he had an affair with a staffer who then subsequently immolated herself, set herself on fire. No. Brandon Herrera, as of mid-Monday morning, Brandon Herrera has about a 1.5-point lead over Gonzalez, but less than 50% of the vote. So that's going to a runoff. That, again, means more money spent in the primary rather than spending money in the general.
And Crenshaw, too. Crenshaw lost his race.
Crenshaw doesn't get to go to a runoff. Crenshaw lost
He's
outright.
Done. He lost outright. He lost, I believe... It was he's served 4 terms and he's done. He lost handily. There's no runoff. He's out.
Yep. And again, I think in that case, you know, that was not necessarily because of Crenshaw's Second Amendment views. I think that there were some other issues that, led voters there to think, I mean, he's a little squishy. Right.
Well, was he there? Texas voters were concerned that he wasn't MAGA enough. He tried to to hide behind the fact that he gave some examples of that, but in the end it wasn't enough and Crenshaw's out the door.
Yeah, not even close.
A shake up in Texas.
Yeah. You know, I started looking at these numbers and here's something I think gun owners really need to be concerned about. Democrats, I believe in the Texas Senate primary, had more votes than the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And I know in Texas 23, Democrats, at least again, as of midday Monday, have outpaced Republicans in voting in that district. Now, that is considered a safe Republican seat. So R plus seven under the Cook political scoring system. And I went and I looked at 2024, what happened 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, or excuse me, 2 years ago, the Republicans had 57,630 voters in their primary. Democrats had 27,893.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, 54,808 votes in the GOP primary, 57,587 for Democrats.
They're energized.
Democrats picked up 30,000. I mean, they more than doubled their vote from 2 years
ago. They're energized.
It's the
sheer hatred of Donald Trump. And let's juxtapose that against what happened in Virginia, of course, and flipping 18 seats in the delegates, House of Delegates, which we knew we had an idea was going to happen, but not 18 seats.
Mm-hmm.
So the Democrats are energized. And I also want to visit Texas state Senate race. It was 14 or 17. Forgive me for not. It was Harris County.
Okay.
And our good friend Lee Wamsgans lost that race. Trump took that district by 17 points. She lost that by 14 points. That's a 31-point swing in a solid red district. And she lost that special election. I want to point that out. It was also during the ice storm as well.
Right.
But there was a significant swing. Now, he's not even going to be able to cast a vote between now and November. So she's rerunning for that in the general. The problem that we see here is those numbers in that state Senate race also align with what you were just talking about with energized voters in the Democrat side, as many as 3-1. So that should ring alarm bells to Republicans, even in the bright red, great state of Texas, that the Democrats are energized and the Republicans had better not take this lying down, period, or absolutely, we can lose these races.
Absolutely. You know, and I heard after Virginia, I heard people say, well, Virginia's a blue state. I mean, not really. You know, it's pretty darn purple, 6-5 in terms of congressional representation. You had Republicans win all statewide offices 4 years ago. I've heard the excuse, well, it's, you know, special elections in Texas. I mean, you can make excuses if you want, but then don't be surprised if you get your ass handed to you on election day.
You ignore it at your own peril, ladies and gentlemen. You ignore the numbers at your own peril. And the Republican Party had better be smart enough. And, you know, what we know that they have their own internal polling, et cetera, as we get closer. But, guys, this race has kicked off. It began. It officially began yesterday.
Yeah.
So the primary season is well underway. Congress hangs in the balance.
And listen, we've got state level elections too, right? I mean, so there are states that hang in the balance. And I you know, this is I just want to put it out there. I don't think any gun owner, no matter where they live, no matter how long they're, you know, pro to representatives have been there, you cannot take their wins for granted. You cannot just assume that you are going to have pro Second mm-hmm. Amendment politicians representing you this year, and you don't have to get off the couch. All you have to do is go and vote. You've got to get involved. You've got to, you know, find those campaigns, find those candidates that you really want to support and put forth some effort, because this is a brutal environment right now for Republicans.
Well, voting is just the least they can do.
For the Second Amendment.
Voting is the least they can do.
Yeah.
Okay, if you do nothing else, make sure you vote. But if you can get active in this and make phone calls and canvass and do what you have to do, if you have the time to volunteer, by all means, do that. Because it's all riding on this. Now, let's just assume Trump loses one side or the other or both in midterms. Talk about a busy lame duck session, congressional lame duck session. Okay, these things that we've done at the Second Amendment, which isn't as fast as we'd like to see, they all need to be codified. So you're going to have a very busy 2 to 3 months before, you know, everybody's sworn in. This is a messy election cycle, and it's a very dangerous election cycle, more dangerous than people want to let on to believe. I know the Republican Party doesn't want to put that fear out, but maybe at this point that fear is what we need. Fear is going to drive voters. Look at what you're seeing from the Democrat side. They are energized in their hatred to Donald Trump, brother, and they're bringing it, and they're well-funded. They're not going to lay back. It's that simple.
Absolutely. And, you know, listen, I mean, gun control groups are going to be spinning in a lot of these seats. You know, they might not have thought a month ago that they were going to invest heavily in Texas 23. I think they're going to spend a ton of money in Texas 23, particularly if Brandon Herrera is the Republican candidate.
You
right.
Bet.
You know, they see an expanded map, and I think they do see a path to take back not just the House, but the Senate as well. And, you know, again, I just wanted to talk about it a little bit because that is my concern waking up Wednesday morning looking at these results.
Eye-opening, man.
For better news, but I didn't see much good news out of the results out of Texas. So, so that brings us to what happened on Monday, where I think we did get some good news from the Supreme Court. The oral arguments in U.S. versus Somani. This is the challenge to Section 922 G3, which prohibits unlawful users of drugs and drug addicts from possessing firearms. In this case, it wasn't a matter of addiction. It was a matter of unlawful use, right? The habitual use of marijuana. And that was what Ali Daniel Hamani was convicted of. Fifth Circuit says, no. There's no national tradition of barring users of intoxicating substances from possessing firearms, maybe while they're intoxicated, but not everybody who uses an intoxicating substance. DOJ appealed that decision. I mean, I was fascinated, Mark. 2 hours of oral arguments, and I think the court's going to rule in favor of Ali Daniel Hamani, but I don't think it's going to be the same makeup that we saw in Heller or Bruin or even Rahimi.
Completely different. You're going to see a couple liberal justices. I'm going to go down as guessing on this, which is always tough to do when you're listening to oral arguments and questioning. You never know how a justice is going to come down based on questions, but there were some telltale signs. Sotomayor questioning, just because there was an illegal substance in the home that was not being used, does that in fact make him dangerous simply because a firearm was around? I mean, she used the word firearm. You know, this is a tool that the justices, the liberal justices, you can, you know, you get an assault weapons ban case. I can tell you right now, all three liberal justices are going to rule against the assault weapons. That's what they're going to do. So it was interesting to see this. This case fascinates me all the way around. Hamani's not a good guy. While he's using, if he's not using, there's millions of people that are going to be impacted by this decision. This is usually the case with Supreme Court decisions. But in this one, it's so narrow and it's so tailored. How is the court going to rule? I'm going to say 7-2. I'm going 7-2 on this. I don't know what DEI hire Ketanji Brown is going to do. It's hard to gauge her. I don't know what, you know, Thomas, what could Thomas do? Right now, the talk is Alito and Roberts look to be the wishy-washy votes on the conservative side of the court. What is Thomas going to do? Even if Thomas swings over, that's a 6-3 decision. Hamani wins this case.
Yeah, I think he does. And again, I think the real question is, like you said, how narrow is the decision? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, my guess is that the court recognizes, right, that there are 40 states out there that have legalized medical marijuana. There's, I think, 24 that have legalized it recreationally. I think the court is cognizant of that. So I think that they're going to at least address this in terms of marijuana use, I believe.
Well, the question is begged, Cam.
Yeah.
Why? Why are they swayed? And now they can be cognizant of it, but is it going to sway their decision? Those states are violating federal law. Let's look at the bottom line of the law here. Mm-hmm. Marijuana is illegal currently under federal law. That's the crux of the problem. It doesn't matter if Colorado or Florida or any, pick a state, Oregon, right, California, legalize weed. It's a violation of federal law. The feds are choosing not to act on that. So how is that going to impact the law? Being aware of that, something that is technically illegal and giving that some deference, that's why this case just fascinates me all the way around.
So, that's, I think, an argument for maybe a broader decision, right? Justice Amy Coney Barrett talked about some of the other drugs that are scheduled,
right,
that are illegal, you know, to use without a prescription, right? And they're talking about reclassifying the marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. Mm-hmm. And the DOJ's attorney was basically took the position like, yeah, every scheduled drug is bad. And if you're using it illegally, then, you know, we can prosecute you. But kind of suggested there was like a sliding scale, right? More likely to prosecute Schedule 1, Schedule 2, maybe Schedule 3. You get down to Schedule 4, Schedule 5, probably not, because the government said, you know, there's maybe not as much of an indication of violence associated with that drug use. But Amy Coney Barrett talked about, all right, well, listen, I mean, Adderall is Schedule 2, right? And she listed off a bunch of other drugs that she's like, I don't necessarily think there's a propensity for violence for anybody using this drug. They got into the idea of, you know, okay, so if a wife has a prescription for Ambien and her husband takes one of her pills once or twice a week to help him go to sleep, she can legally own a gun, but he's prohibited. And the DOJ said, yeah,
yeah,
basically so, right?
That is why this is so fascinating, because you know, when that question was asked by Sotomayor, just because it's in there, and you focused on the word wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, intoxicated. So this is when you see the alcohol argument come up, okay? And again, I want to throw out the caveat. Alcohol is legal, but it's only legal because men and women said it is. Remember, there was a multiple year period, well over a decade, where alcohol was made illegal by men and women. We changed those laws. That doesn't change the effect of alcohol on people or make anybody violent. Look, guys get drunk at football games on a Super Bowl and get mad and angry when their team loses and beat their wives. There's alcohol in their house. It's a legal substance. It's also toxic. It causes more damage and death than any of those other drugs combined. Well, marijuana anyway. I don't want to throw everybody else the fentanyl and everything in there. But, you know, when we're talking about it in terms of weed, you know, alcohol causes terrible problems. But it's legal, everybody said. Okay, that's fine. So if you, I was on Mark Cox in the Morning, 97.1 in St. Louis yesterday. And I asked Mark, I'm the host, even though I'm a guest, I have to ask questions. It's just in my DNA, right? And I said, Mark, have you ever had an alcoholic beverage? He said, well, of course I have. I said, have you ever had too many? He said, of course I have. I did Friday. I had too many. I said, did you have guns in the house? Yes, I did. Are you a dangerous person because the guns are in the home while you're intoxicated only because men and women said it was legal? So if men and women say marijuana is legal and change it from illegal, or at least put it in that context in Hamani's terms, again, you know, we can go back and forth and bat this around like a pickleball all day long. It's a fascinating conversation. Well, but again, Hamani wins the case.
I agree with you, bottom line. And I think one of the reasons why Hamani is going to win this case is because the argument from Aaron Murphy, who is Hamani's attorney, I think was really powerful, right? I mean, the government is basically relying on habitual drunkard statutes from, you know, the 1700s, and
8 shots versus 16 shots is right, what the is what Gorsuch was brought said. Up by Gorsuch, I believe, right. It was Bill Gorsuch that brought that up. You are considered a habitual drunkard only after you drink 8 shots of liquor per day.
But not even that. No, 8 was fine. 8 was a moderate drinker. 16.
Yeah. Anything above that, 16 or double, that's what it was, right? It's crazy numbers.
But there was also the idea that, you know, within that, so it's not the idea that habitual drinkers are prohibited from owning firearms, right? She said, and 922 G3 is habitual drug users are forbidden from possessing firearms. But the statute back then wasn't habitual drinkers are, you know, prohibited from owning firearms or they could be committed or whatever. It was habitual drunkards, right? It was the behavior of these individuals while they were intoxicated. In fact, the behavior of these individuals, the substance abuse was so bad that while they were sober, they still could not be trusted to make the right decision, right? And that's a very different standard, as Aaron Murphy pointed out, from what 922 G3 is today.
Was actually relying on Bruin. Let's face facts. Okay, they were looking at Bruin, and if the Supreme Court follows their own precedent set in Bruin, there's no way Hamani loses this case. You've got to go, Boone. You talk about founding era. Most meetings were held in taverns.
Right.
Every single one of our founding fathers brewed their own stuff or distilled their own stuff, for the most part, in their own basements. Okay, now I would love to taste some of the stuff they distilled back then. I don't know how it stacks up to a Buffalo Trace or a Maker's Mark.
I think more like Everclear than a Buffalo Trace.
Probably was. So that adds even more credence to the 8 to 16. That they believe that to be an extent of, because I'm certain the proof was higher, and I'm sure someone made the comment, watch out, that stuff's going to make you go blind, okay? So, yeah, it is fascinating all the way around, but then you throw the word wow in, and okay, there's the alcohol. Maybe he's not drinking today because he's sleeping it off. Is he any more or less dangerous today than he was yesterday because the guns are still hanging over there on the rack and nothing has changed in that respect? So what did the founders have to do? They had to define that level of drunkard in order to somehow rely on whatever statute or code that they were building at the time by discerning, well, what makes this person a drunkard? And so they had to have that definition in there. In today's standards, it's 0.08 if you're driving, for example.
Yeah, but okay. This is, again, I mean, it's not just about how much you drink. In fact, 922G3 says nothing about the quantity of drugs, right? It's about, but the historical statute, again, the behavior of that individual was an inherent part of that statute, and it's not a part of the modern statute. And, you know, just real quick, getting back to like how this looks, I think 7-2 is likely. I think 6-3 is possible. In fact, I predicted 6-3 with Thomas, Roberts, and Alito in the minority. But, you know, I could see Kagan joining Roberts and Alito. She was pretty quiet during the oral argument. She didn't say anything that necessarily made me think.
Hard to say.
She's on there. She's on. Yeah, right. It was hard to discern where she came down. Yeah. Thomas, I think, asked maybe one, maybe two questions. So, again, kind of hard to hear where he came down. Alito pretty clearly came down on the side of 922 G3 is just fine. Robert certainly seemed to indicate that that there would be, you know, big problems if the statute was overturned and to any degree. But I do think, you know, 6-3, I guess you could say if Thomas and Kagan both, you know, join the minority, it would still be 5-4. In
5-4. Hamani wins the case. I think he wins the case hands down, unless something very unusual comes out of the writings of the justices based on what we saw or heard in oral arguments, which is, you know, always the case. That's a broad brush statement. But this case, it looks to be at this point, and this is always very hard to do, but this one doesn't seem hard for some weird reason. As I said, you know, I say it unequivocally, Hamani wins this case. It's just a matter of, you know, whether it's 5-4, 6-3, 7-2. I can easily see a 7-2 or 6-3. I think 5-4 is more of a stretch based on the liberal justices. You know, look, there's another way to couch this. Why, when we had a Democrat administration, doesn't the Democrats who are more, or don't the Democrats who are more sympathetic to marijuana use than Republicans or conservatism, liberalism is far more than conservatism is, which is why I wouldn't be shocked to see Thomas or somebody else flip over on that. But why do the Democrats maintain the illegality at the federal level whenever they're in power of marijuana? I have a pretty brief, simple answer to that. It's debatable by some folks. Because if they legalize weed, that allows millions more Americans to lawfully purchase guns, which is something that they don't want. So they'd rather let the states do what they do, be hands off, don't get the feds involved. And oh, by the way, when you're filling out that 4473, don't you forget that pot is legal. I don't care if you have a marijuana card, okay? That's 11F, I believe it is, on the 4473 form, if my numbers are correctly, without it in front of me. And that's a federal perjury charge. Now, a Trump administration, while leaving it illegal at the federal level, is likely not going to go after those gun owners unless there was something egregious, which, you know, again, men or women are going to have to define what's egregious there. It's pretty subjective. But at the same time, they're going to kind of let it slide a little bit. They're just like the Democrats are not going after the states or the feds going after the states for the marijuana violations of the federal codes. You know, it's fascinating to me all the way around because there are so many different rabbit holes that you can go down with this case. But again, the bottom line, Hamani wins the case. I'm going to stay with 7-2. I think I might be off it. I kind of tend to see I'm 51-49 on that 7-2. 6-3 might be a little more likely. I think Thomas might move over, but I'm going to stay with it just for fun. See what happens.
We'll see. And you know, it's a great point about, you know, why nothing changes legislatively. There was a bill that was introduced. I don't know if it's around this Congress. I know it was around last session. It was called the Graham Act. I can't remember what it stood. Gun Rights and Marijuana Act. That's what it stood for. And it basically just would have said, if marijuana is legal in your state, then you can answer the Form 4473 that no, you're not an unlawful user of drugs as long as you're using, you know, marijuana in accordance with state law. That bill, last time I saw, had, I think, 3 co-sponsors, right? It went nowhere. Democrats, for the exact reason you're talking about, they didn't want anything to do with it. And I think Republicans generally were like, well, no, we don't want to do anything that's going to encourage marijuana use. So they didn't sign on to it either, right? So,
but I think that's why you don't see lawsuits against any of that, against ATF on those forms. I mean, you see, of course, lawsuits against the ATF. But when it comes to that, they added that caveat when states began throwing that out. And I forget how many years ago it was. Forgive me for that. When it went on the 4473 with that reminder that violate marijuana is still illegal under federal law when that flipped over to the 4473. But, you know, again, we're talking about state versus federal here. That's why no court, I don't think, ATF would win that case hands down. Absolutely. Because Congress is the one that has to make the change.
Yep.
Yep, you know,
absolutely. So unless the courts do, which maybe
that would be a pretty activist court because it's pretty clear who writes those laws. But we've seen activist courts before.
Yeah, well, I think one of the issues that that's going to come into play here is the vagueness of the statute. Sotomayor that brought this up. Aaron Murphy actually brought it up too, but then it wasn't really the crux of her argument. But you know, the statute itself does not define unlawful. The courts have kind of tried to figure out what that means. The DOJ has had its own interpretation of what unlawful means, and to them, habitual it has to include habitual use, right? So you can occasionally snort cocaine, and you're not an unlawful drug user. But right. If you, you know, use a gummy to help you go to sleep every night, you are.
Okay. Well, what if habitual use? What if habitual use makes you a really laid back, quiet person?
See, that's the thing, right? It doesn't matter. But also, habitual is not defined in the statute because habitual isn't in the statute. So now you've replaced one undefined term with another. So I think there is a really strong argument to void this entirely due to vagueness. I don't know that that's going to get majority support.
Yeah.
But again, I think you're right. Broad strokes, Imani wins. What that means, we're going to have to wait and see.
Oh, yeah, that's going to decide how close. Yeah, that's going to decide how close the who writes the majority opinion stays in the guardrails here.
Yeah.
If they go out, you know, we generally don't. I don't like to see the court go outside the guardrails unless it's a case I believe they should have. Like Heller, for is a great example. I would have loved to seen Scalia get outside those guardrails just a tad bit, but he didn't. He stayed narrowly focused, left the rest to Congress to write the law, which is really what we want him to do. I don't know how this case, you know, if you've got justices, if you've got Sotomayor or Kagan or, you know, even Ketanji Brown, who's going to write this opinion for the majority? Is it going to be a liberal justice writes the majority for the opinion? Or makes your opinion for the majority? Wow. And then what kind of dissent are you going to get if Thomas flips over? Because I guarantee he'd love to write the dissent and tear up the liberals.
He and Alito are going to go to blows if it comes down to that, because I know Alito's chopping at the bit. But, you know, listen, I mean, between Imani, which I think, again, we are in agreement here that it's going to go for the defendant in this case, because it was the government that appealed.
Right.
And then Wolford versus Lopez. You know, I think the Supreme Court's going to strike down Hawaii's vampire rule.
Agreed.
We have to wait to see the scope and the breadth of these decisions, but I think that we are going to see two more generally positive decisions for our right to keep our arms come out of the court at the end of this term.
Yeah, and let's talk conference briefly. I know we're going to have to go soon. We're pushing the conference. We could go on and on. I could talk with you about this all day. And guys, just to let you know, Cam will be on the show today. And we'll be continuing this conversation because it is a fun one. But let's look at what happened in conference. Nothing as far as assault weapons bans again. We've got four other cases that are out there right now. Cam, we need to get an assault weapons ban case up, and we need to get it quickly. No guarantee they're not going to take one this term, but I'm leaning towards second term. I happen to agree with Mr. Gottlieb on that one. That case is going to require an awful lot of work for the justices. Maybe not so much for those like a Thomas or an Alito, but it might for a Barrett. I don't think it much will be for Kavanaugh. I'm hopeful. I would love to get one of these cases to put your situation in Virginia to bed. Finally, put that nail in the coffin, not just for Virginia, but for everybody around the country that lives behind the blue wall and behind these bogus unconstitutional laws that take away their guns. So keep your fingers crossed, folks. The cases are out there. We've got it set up strategically right. We just need them to take one.
I still think they're waiting on the Third Circuit. I hope that they keep a hold of every one of these cases. They haven't rejected them, which is good. You know, they're and if they want to keep them in limbo until the Third Circuit decision comes out and maybe a circuit court split develops, okay. I mean, it's not ideal. I would prefer to take them, you know, I would prefer they took Snope last term.
We should have had the Fourth Circuit, but we didn't get it. So look, I'm going to take a W now whenever I can take the W, if that's the final nail and the buzzer rings. I want that W. That's all I'm looking for.
The only other thing I mentioned about the case that we heard in conference, they had hung on to a case called Vincent versus Bonnie, Melinda Vincent. I think it was 17 years ago. She wrote a bad check for like $489 to cover groceries. She was a homeless drug addict at the time. She got probation, but she was eligible for like a 10-year prison sentence. So she is prohibited by law from possessing firearms. Her case went up to the 10th Circuit. 10th Circuit said 922 G1, facially valid. It's valid as it applies to her. Supreme Court had dismissed most of the G1 challenges that had been brought before them, and they hung onto her case for a few weeks. I kind of thought we would have seen maybe a written dissent from denial of cert, but I don't know what happened. Anyway, they dismissed her case, so you know, we've been talking about 922G3, but it looks like the court right now is willing to accept the Trump administration's position that there is going to be a rights restoration process available for people mm-hmm. who've, you know, been convicted of a felony crime or a crime punishable by more than a year in jail. And I think they're going to give the administration some time to get that mm-hmm. in place because they've turned away every challenge now to 922G1. So that's worth keeping in mind as well. But yeah, we're going to continue this conversation this afternoon.
We will.
On the Armed America Radio Daily Defense. I'm looking forward to it. What time are we doing that? Have we figured out the time today?
We will be live at 4 p.m. Eastern later today, 1 p.m. Pacific time. You can do the math in between the time zones. And guys, I do have one piece of advice for you. If you don't want to find yourself in the situation where Cam and I are talking about, just don't commit a felony. It's not an issue, okay? That's the easiest thing to do. All right.
There you go. Mark Walters, always appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you this afternoon.
You bet. ArmedAmericanRadio.com, folks. We'll see you on the radio.
My thanks to Mark for joining me on the program and looking forward to joining him this afternoon as well. Before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, I want to talk about this for just a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. That's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story of its own. Every stitch, every buckle, every strap reflecting timeless craftsmanship, and it's backed by a lifetime warranty. Because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it is the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather. It's modern style, timeless durability, backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection, and you can find yours today at modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. Love my Modern Rugged bag. I was out. Not last weekend, but the weekend before last. I'm going to be out this coming weekend, and I have great peace of mind knowing that this bag is going to look good, hold everything I need so I can take my work with me on the road. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Virginia. Fox News reporting a Virginia murder suspect in a bus stop stabbing had a lengthy criminal history. Including multiple dropped charges. They say that he has a lengthy criminal history filled with multiple arrests, but he was let onto the streets nearly every time. 32-year-old Abdul Jalla is charged in the murder of 41-year-old Stephanie Minter of Fredericksburg, Virginia, at a bus stop shelter in Fairfax County. Minter was found by officers with stab wounds to her upper body. She was pronounced dead at the scene. The 32-year-old Jalla was seen on surveillance cameras exiting the bus with Minter at Richmond Highway and Arlington Drive. He was arrested the next day at a liquor store after an employee called 911, allegedly because he was shoplifting. And investigators later linked him to Minter's killing a day later. According to Fox News, authorities still trying to determine a motive for the killing, what led to the stabbing. But a search of online court records revealed that Jalla has more than a dozen arrests in Northern Virginia, including charges of petty larceny, which, I mean, honestly, that's probably not going to result in anything other than a slap on the wrist. Malicious wounding? I mean, that's a more serious offense, right? But in most of these cases, according to Fox 5 in D.C., prosecutors dropped the charges. Laura Birnbaum, who is the chief of staff for the Fairfax County Commonwealth's Attorney Office, said that Jalla was known to the DA's office and they were, quote, acutely aware of the risk he posed to the community. She said, that's why we convicted the defendant of a 2023 malicious wounding charge and have since made every effort to hold him accountable each subsequent time that he's come in contact with the criminal justice system, including asking him to be held in custody whenever possible. Unfortunately, she said, the defendant in this case also had a history of selecting victims with no fixed address, some of the most vulnerable members of our community. In multiple cases, we were unable to move forward with prosecution because the victims could not be located or contacted. And, you know, when we talk about why career criminals are among us, there are, sadly, a variety of reasons, right? And one of those reasons is witnesses who don't testify. Either because they're unable to be found, like apparently in some of these cases since 2023, when Jalla is accused of committing the violent crimes. But again, we're talking about people who are transient, who are homeless, Prosecutors have a very difficult time finding these individuals, right? Then there's the witness intimidation, when witnesses are too afraid to testify because of the repercussions. And if you don't have a witness, unless you've got really strong physical evidence, maybe you've got surveillance cameras and footage that you can use, without that eyewitness testimony, it's very, very difficult to move forward with the prosecution. In this case, again, without a witness, apparently without much physical evidence either, prosecutors couldn't even go after a plea deal for some of these crimes. They were simply forced to dismiss charges altogether. I am a little curious about the malicious wounding, because that was 2023. That was less than 3 years ago. So what kind of sentence did Jala receive for that serious violent offense? And was that an actual conviction? Was that what he was originally charged with? Or was that a plea deal? We'll try to find out more information about that. But yet again, another example of somebody with a very lengthy criminal history out on the streets and targeting a unarmed, disarmed victim. I don't know if, by the way, if Ms. Minter had a concealed carry license. I do know the public transportation in Fairfax County is a gun-free zone. And, we're talking about Supreme Court cases. The Supreme Court set to consider Schoenthal versus Raul in conference later this month, I believe, as a matter of fact. This is a challenge to the ban on concealed carry and public transportation in Illinois and the policy of the Chicago Transit Authority banning firearms in public transportation. I wrote over the weekend that the CTA is experiencing record high levels of violent crime. In fact, since 2021, every year has seen a record high increase in violent crime on Chicago Transit Authority property, on the gun-free Chicago Transit Authority property. Now, the Seventh Circuit says, well, there's a tradition of banning lawful carry in confined public spaces. And they point to, like, some rules that, you can't carry a gun at a state fair, or you can't carry a gun at an educational exhibition in Texas in, like, 1970. Supreme Court said in Bruin that New York could not declare the island of Manhattan a sensitive place merely because it is crowded and generally protected by police. Seventh Circuit says, well, subways aren't quite like that. They say, if you look at like 19th century railroad rules, many of these railroads prohibited the carrying of firearms or required them to be stored in luggage. No laws at the time, right? So now we're looking at private companies' rules as opposed to actual statutes. I don't think there is a national tradition of banning firearms in public transportation. I definitely don't think that it is constitutional to deprive people who are dependent on public transportation of their right to bear arms in self-defense. And again, taking the Constitution out of it, just looking at it from a pragmatic basis, Chicago's Transit Authority, gun-free, weapons-free, and record-high numbers of violent crimes. So when do people actually get the opportunity to protect themselves? It's protected generally by police. Yeah, there may be some crowded trains. But if you're on a train at 1 o'clock in the morning and it's you and somebody decides to randomly stab you or set you on fire, call me crazy, I think you've got the right to protect yourself in those circumstances. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Des Moines, Iowa, where a homeowner shot an alleged intruder during a late-night break-in. This happened Saturday night, according to Des Moines police. They were called out to the home just after 11 p.m. on reports of an intruder attacking the homeowner. When officers were on the way, the dispatcher informed them that the intruder had been shot. When they got on scene, they found Stanita Wilson inside the home, multiple gunshot wounds. Officers provided first aid until the fire department rescue personnel arrived and transported her to a local hospital. According to investigators, the homeowner said he heard somebody yelling in the backyard, and then he heard somebody banging on the back door. Now, I don't know why, but the homeowner unlocked the door and then opened it. And that is when Stanita Wilson allegedly forced her way inside and began assaulting the homeowner. To me, if it's 11 o'clock at night and I'm hearing somebody yell in the backyard and I'm hearing somebody pounding on my door, I'm not unlocking that door. But For whatever reason, homeowner decided, okay. Homeowner did have a handgun with him and was able to defend himself from Wilson's attack. Wilson's injuries, despite multiple gunshot wounds, described as minor. She was treated and released from the hospital, but she's also been charged with second-degree burglary. Police said that Wilson was not known to the homeowner, and as of Sunday, at least, no charges have been filed against the homeowner in question. I haven't seen any updates since then to indicate that the homeowner has been charged, so this does appear to be a case of self-defense there in Des Moines, Iowa. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in Colorado who ran across a frozen lake to rescue a man who fell through ice. While on the other side of the lake, there was an event where people were voluntarily jumping into the lake. Yeah, I know. This was in Evergreen, Colorado, Evergreen Lake. And I guess every year they do an event called the Evergreen Lake Plunge. So this was Sunday. While this event is going on, or I guess as it was wrapping up, in another part of the lake, about 700 feet away, a man fell through the ice. And a guy named Scott LaPierre, who was driving by, wasn't even a part of like the, you know, the plunge event. He was just driving by. He said he saw the young man run across the lake, or he witnessed, a young man run across the lake to save the other man. LaPierre said he was amazed that the rescuer didn't fall through the thin ice himself, but that he was able to actually crawl to the edge of the hole and then pull the victim out of the water. So Evergreen Fire Rescue confirming to CBS News that someone was treated by emergency medical personnel and that the Good Samaritan was treated as well, but he left the scene without revealing his identity. So don't know who this person was, but they really were in the right place at the right time, unable to save the life of somebody who inadvertently plunged into the lake while apparently several dozen other people were doing so on purpose to raise funds for children with disabilities. KUSA reports the Evergreen Lake Plunge normally happens around New Year's Day, but it was delayed this year because of difficult weather conditions. And so they, I guess, held it, you know, this past weekend. Lindsay Frost, who is the Secretary for Active for All, which benefits the children with disabilities, or benefits from the plunge, said the ice wasn't what we needed it to be, so we're doing a run and jump sort of situation instead of an actual ice plunge. And I guess the ice really wasn't what they needed it to be, since it was thin enough for somebody to fall through. But again, the anonymous Good Samaritan in the right place at the right time, willing and able to save a stranger in need. We thank you for your very, very good deed. And just as Mark Walter says, you know, one way to avoid trouble as a gunner is not to commit any felonies. One way to avoid falling into a frozen lake is to not go out onto the frozen lake. There you go. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. We'll be back tomorrow with another look at what's going on in the world of our right to keep and bear arms. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We're keeping up to date on all of the latest second news from all across the nation. If you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP Gold, or be a Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership, no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you're going to get some great benefits. We'll also be supporting the work that we're doing at Bearing Arms. I want to thank you very much for that. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. So then, be well. Be safe.